You're not alone, you're not crazy, and you're right to not be satisfied. Because you are infinite brilliance, and it's time to start shining. Welcome to the Lights Like Us podcast. Lights like us together. This is Ryan.
And this is Heidi.
And hope you're doing awesome today. We were starting our podcast with What's Good, and we did look it up, and we were slightly off.
A little fact check.
Little fact check, yep. Which we are really happy to do around here, just for the record.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because we're wrong all the time. Mm-hmm. And so it was not...
Not all the time.
No, you're right. We're right most of the time. it was not Dutch. It was Finnish.
Mm-hmm. You're the one that made me say Dutch. I remember that.
I probably did.
I think it's Dutch. And I said, okay. And then, just kidding. Okay,
I could have.
Who cares?
I could have. We're not going to go back and listen.
Nope.
And it was not what is good. It is what was a good moment today, or what was your best moment today? Something along those lines.
Yeah, the post was talking about the Finnish tradition at bedtime, and I read it really fast, obviously, but as a closure to the day, to end the day without anxiety, what was the best moment of the day? What was a good moment? The last good moment of the day was
right.
What it said.
Right.
And I love that because typically I'm falling asleep and I'm thinking of all the things I need to do tomorrow.
Right.
So it was just a grounding and really cool concept to say. It's kind of the same. Isn't there I'm just pulling this out of my brain. St. Ignatius. Isn't there what is the thing it's called something at the end of the night and it's a replay of your day. I remember when I took that spiritual direction class. It's called it's kind of the same thing of like re-going over your day and having some closure of some sort. Anyway, another podcast, we'll fact check that and I'll nail it next time.
Okay. Well, but we're going to still keep with the theme, which also relates to today's theme when we get there. But the theme was just a good moment.
And noticing, I feel like it helps us to keep our eyes open of good things and tender things and things that made us feel, I don't know, like they matter. It's a part of life.
Yeah. So what's your good moment? Do you have one? Also, I like that we just do this on the fly. I haven't really thought of one either.
Yeah, no rehearsing. But when you said that, what came to mind kind of surprises me because it's confusing. But this morning we walked to coffee and it was very rainy and we're getting set up and we sit down and I look to my left and there's this man who's older than us. I don't know, maybe 15, maybe 20 years older. So not...
I know. We're starting to be like...
We're kind of joining the crew of the older people. Mm-hmm. But his hands were shaking and... But his presence was so good. He was like very at peace. He sat in the corner. The way the light was hitting him was really cool. He had his phone out. He's all alone. Mm-hmm. He was happy. Oh, I had no sadness for him. That he was alone. It was that he was very content. And he was very doing what he wanted to do and having coffee by himself. But his hands were shaking, and I had to hold the tears in twice. Mm-hmm. I didn't even tell you that I saw this guy until the very end.
Mm-hmm. I saw him too.
Yeah, but it made me cry. This life gets thrown at us, and we don't know what's coming. And maybe has an early stages of Parkinson's. Maybe it's just a tremor that's always been there. I don't know his story, but. I think what got me was just this, even in a really hard diagnosis, in my imagination for him, he's walking to coffee, he's sitting down by the light, he's has his phone out and he's talking to people or he's reading something on a book or something, but he's living his life, his hands are shaking, he's clicking, 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 and it just struck me as beautiful and hard and a pretty good snapshot of life.
Yeah.
What about you?
Mine was, I don't even know why, but it was, we went to this calzone place last night that wasn't that great, but you were sitting behind, a brick wall was behind you, and I don't know, that's what I thought of. Just sitting there. I think probably beer always makes me have a little great moment, a little, that perfect little buzz, you know? I don't know, maybe it was just that's probably what it was. We sold our house. We signed a deal yesterday, and so it just felt like a kind of relaxing, like, being present moment where I was just I don't know. It just felt like a good, nice moment where we were calm and present again and
grateful.
Grateful. Relaxed, I think. Maybe a little less anxiety of, I don't know what it was.
So basically what you're saying is pizza and beer is always good.
I mean, that is hard to argue.
Yeah.
But also just relaxing on a Friday and things to be grateful for. And I don't know.
Well, I said to you, let's go on a date tonight. And, you know, Japan was so cheap and expensive. Everything was so inexpensive. So it was really fun to be like, let's pop in here. Let's pop in here. And then in Seattle, it's quite the opposite. But I did see this little pizza calzone place. And I said, let's go on a date. Let's do Japan in Seattle. Let's walk. Mm-hmm. And let's
But we didn't go to the Japanese restaurant.
No, I didn't say we're going to eat Japanese. Mm-hmm. I wanted calzone.
Yeah.
And did. It was magical. You just said it was good. It's a good thing. So
it was. It was. But imagine what I'd said if we'd gone to the Japanese restaurant.
Anyway, we're not trying to recreate Japanese things. We're just trying to... The essence of being on vacation is so fun to be like, let's just adventure and try something we've never tried before.
You're right. And you hit on it. It was an exploring and new. And you know that's what I love about travel. It's what I love about living in big cities where there's just constant new fun things to just try. And even though it wasn't great, we both said it wasn't great.
Yeah, but I think
I loved just being in a new spot we didn't know anything about. We just walked in and it was just, here we are. You're appreciating it more. That's what we even said at coffee. One of the things I love about travel is you're more in the moment because there's so many new things you have to pay attention. And I was paying attention last night.
I think that that's the thing that Japan also I brought back, didn't even think about, is the whole... Sometimes I have a lot of pressure. If you're going to go out and spend money, you want to make sure you've researched it, you know where you're going, and you're not going to make a bad decision or spend money on something that wasn't that great.
Mm-hmm.
And it was freeing to be in Japan and be like, we don't know anything because there's so much to try. So we just would be brave and pop in. So yeah. I love that we just tried that last night and it was fun. And it was also, it was a memory. And yeah, we're going to pop in somewhere different next time.
Yep. Okay, well, speaking of Japan, we did talk last episode about Japan, but we couldn't end there because there's just a part two-ish. I mentioned reading this book. I finished it, 8 Million Ways to Happiness by Hiroko Yodo, probably butchering that name, but I was obsessed with this book. I read it before we went to Japan, read it during Japan, which also I highly recommend. If you're going on a trip, find a book about that place you're going and read it. It makes the place come alive and the book come alive. I mean, I did it in Germany, read that book about Goebbels in Hawaii, about just kind of how white people came and stole Hawaii. And it was just, it's so much more, I don't know. I highly, highly recommend it. So I was reading this book in Japan, finished it when we got back. And there's so many things I want to say about this book and Shinto religion. First, though, one story we didn't say about Japan was the onsens, which I couldn't believe we didn't talk about. Because the onsens, if you don't know, they're just hot tubs. They started, obviously, natural mineral hot spring type things. And in the hotels, a lot of them have them, and their clothes are prohibited. They are separate, male and female. And you go in, every hotel gives you a little robe and slippers. You put on your robe and slippers and you go up to this onsen. You have to shower beforehand. Everyone's just showering in public on these little...
But you sit down and you shower in these little stalls. So you're protected while you're showering, which is funny.
I know, it was. And then you get up naked and you just walk around. And I mean, to me, that was definitely the first time I'd ever been naked in front of people. You were like, oh, well, your locker rooms. I'm like, I don't even remember. I don't even know. Anyway, also, I was like a little kid.
No, to be naked like that, like full on walking from pool to pool that was an experience.
It was an experience.
It was an experience in all different ages, all different shapes, sizes. It was, we'd never experienced it before. And it's a kind of like, it was equivalent to when we went to Portugal. We were on the beach and all these women were topless and there was all shapes and sizes. There was a group of older women walking topless, casually chatting.
Yep.
They were not even, it was like they might as well, they were just in a full on swimsuit. They were just totally comfortable. And I came back with a whole new world of why do I ever stand up and quickly put on a cover up. What is wrong with our...
Yeah.
So I've talked about that probably before, but this was a new, it was a similar thread of why have I not been naked with my girls?
I know.
Women celebrating women of all different ages and our changing bodies. I sat and talked to three German girls that were in their 20s and they were adorable. And they sat up while they talked to me, waist up. So they were as topless as can be. I'm talking, and they're sharing. And I just was, and then my moms and daughters, like little girls, just running. I know what an experience that was, and what a trip being an American girl, who an American boy,
yeah,
and told to be ashamed and hide, and your body's not perfect, and to be ashamed, really.
Yeah, it's another one of those things where you're just, wow, did we grow up in a different way? And there is such. The first night I went in, I didn't have any other people in, I don't think, the whole time, except at the very end. But then the second night in a bigger hotel and third night, it was packed with men. And it was so cool just to be, like you said, the older men always calm me down. These old Japanese guys just coming in, and we were in the sauna naked, and it's just like, wow, what?
Yeah, that's
why
the thing.
Do I carry so much shit with this? And then, like you said, these dads and their little kids, and the little kids are just running around like we all do. Like, what is nudity to a little kid? Nothing. And you see this innocence and this purity. But then, of course, started reading about it, and the Japanese have this whole saying of naked companionship, which it's supposed to, like, people can't hide behind their clothes. So there's this whole beauty to it. Of course, it used to be mixed gender. But of course, Christian missionaries came in and tried to stop it in the 1500s, and eventually, I think, probably had their way. So even that is like this beautiful, just even men and like even we were like, oh boy, I don't know if I can handle men and women being in there. But why? Like, why are we so weird? We just have so much baggage about everything. And it's beautiful to travel and see other cultures who don't in some areas, they do in other areas. Again, no one's perfect here. But what a cool experience that was.
Yeah, and I think in both situations, for me, Portugal and Japan, it highlights how sexualized we've made our bodies.
Yeah.
So to be a woman on a beach with your top off, I was trained, and my dad would say to me, he was strict about what swimming suits I wore, because he would say, Heidi, you don't, other men, you don't even understand. You don't know what they're doing when they
look at
you.
And to be fair, in America, in the West, your dad is probably right.
He's right. But then you see these girls just sitting there topless, like beautiful. One of the girls in Portugal, she's just reading her book on her with her elbows down, you know, ass up, but she's had her bottoms on. But still, I'm like, she's just at peace because she doesn't believe, no one's told her that everyone's staring at her and sexualizing her.
Which I probably men are less. I don't know that.
I don't know that either, but for women, it's empowering. And it's like, it's also like, I'm sorry, that's what you're doing, you weirdo.
Right.
God. But yeah, that was really cool. And I even said, gosh, I think my girlfriends, it's time for us girlfriends, you know who you are. We're going to go and we're going to be topless together in some country, or we're going to be in an onsen together, because who the fuck cares?
Yep. No, it's very freeing.
It's beautiful and celebratory of our bodies and what they've done. We've birthed children. I have stretch marks everywhere. But yep. I birthed three beautiful children and I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
But it's hard to get there.
It is. It is. So it kind of leads into this book, just East West. I remember a long time ago, I was really obsessed with the East West, and there was a quote about breathing out of both lungs with spirituality. And the East is just very different than the West. And so I think it was our first time to be immersed into Eastern culture, which we haven't really thought about. And just realizing that I don't know shit. And it's the greatest feeling. So reading this book on Shinto religion, going to Japan, experiencing some of the religion that I had been reading about and the mix of Buddhism and Shintoism and Shugendo, I can't express. I think my favorite thing in life is just to be humbled with how little I know and how amazing and big the world is and how much there is to know. And the opposite is knowing everything and judging people for not knowing. And that does feel good. I've also lived there for a long time where, man, what an idiot. They don't know this. But I will tell you, the humbling, man, do I not know anything. The world is so big and I can't believe I didn't know this, is 1,000 times better than knowing everything and judging everyone. It is the greatest feeling on earth. I think it's why I love to travel. I love to read. I love to immerse myself in culture, in books. It's such a great feeling.
It blasts thinking small out of the water.
It blasts it. And so all of that to preface, I read this book. I read about Shinto. I am, you know, if you do know me, I was in Japan for a week. Suddenly I'm a Japanese expert. I am not at all. I'm not a Shinto expert. I read one book from one person's perspective and I was in Japan for 10 days. But that doesn't take away from the fact that I was inspired and flabbergasted at a way and a culture that I had not been made aware of before. So I just wanted to highlight, like, I mean, I could honestly quote this entire book to you. I have so many quotes in it. It was just one after the other. I'd highly recommend you read it if you're at all interested in anything, especially spirituality and how to live and how different cultures have tried to express that, live it. And it's called 8 Million Ways to Happiness because in Japan, they believe in 8 million gods, 8 million kamis, they call them, K-A-M-I. And I'm just going to highlight four things I learned from this book, from Shinto religion and primarily, and the Japanese culture that have inspired me. And I just, again, if we can integrate these into our own lives, into our own spirituality, I think we're way ahead of the game. And the first one was, which is crazy, is Shinto is never called a religion. It's just called a way. And she says, an ism is an ideology. An ism is an identity. An ism draws a boundary that separates itself from other things. It was coined, I think, out of insecurity. That Shinto somehow needs an ism to compete, quote unquote, with organized religion, where faith hinges on a contract with an almighty God. ... Then she says, Shinto is described as a religion, but it's really in very literal terms a way, the way of the kami, and ways aren't destinations. First thing, a way. Imagine a way. Also, the way, just for those of you who don't know, Christianity was in its early days called the way. It was not a religion. It was not an ism. It was not an ideology. It wasn't what you were against. It was just this way of life, and it's so much more freeing and like open and lets you breathe. It's just a way to live, a way to go through life, a way to try to connect to mystery and try to connect to each other and try to connect to the things that are beautiful. No scriptures, no evangelists, no statuary. These gods are everywhere in everything, and it's this way to interact with them. I mean, I think I'm just falling out of my chair sometimes that I didn't know that there were cultures of millions of people that have been living for thousands of years with everything I kind of want in life. Like, wait, that's what I wanted Christianity to always be. I wanted it just to be a way. I love Christian. I don't know if that's entirely accurate on interpretation, but
true. The way, the truth, the life.
The way is even different than a way. It's just a way. It's a way of God's. And it's this beautiful, beautiful thing. And I think we said it in the last podcast, but Japan identifies as one of the least religious nations on earth, but it's one of the most spiritual. And it's this temples and shrines everywhere. They kind of create their own temples and shrines, these own ways to interact with the gods. There's eight gods in a piece of rice. I mean, it's just this beautiful, beautiful way to live life. And I think it also helps me as we kind of exit religion, as we have exited religion. It's okay to exit religion. All those isms and entities and all these things that we've hardened into this structure, it's okay to not appreciate or want those because they're so defined by what you're against. They're so defined by if I'm this, I'm not that. They're so defined by all these things instead of just a way to go through life that tries to interact with mystery and with each other. So beautiful, beautiful thing. Second thing that I was blown away by is this, like, half, just the way they view belief. And in our culture, once again, belief is, and it's getting more and more polarized. If you believe this, you definitely don't believe this. Like the spectrum in between is getting massive. And the Japanese have this idiom, I'm not going to try to pronounce it in Japanese, but it means half belief, half disbelief. And she says it's a kind of quantum state of mind. In English, belief and disbelief lie at opposite ends of a spectrum. Normally, they do so in Japanese as well. But this idiom contextualizes belief and disbelief differently, as complements rather than rivals. In our traditions, belief and disbelief don't have to oppose. In fact, they can be mutually inclusive, comfortably sitting side by side in one's mind. As a result, the question of whether one believes something has far more flexibility. And she talks about like this volume novel, like belief is kind of turning the knob. And I think it was Fitzgerald who said, the definition of intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing thoughts in your mind at once and continue. It's something like that. I mean, once again, something to integrate into our own lives, this idea of you can sort of believe things, you know? Mm. You can like kind of believe it and you can kind of not believe it. And when it comes to things like God, oh my God, it is so frustrating how many times people are asked if they believe in God or don't believe in God. And it's this assumption, first off, what even God is are there eight gods in a grain of rice? Is God a way to connect with mystery, which these kami are? That's another quote of just kind of the metaphor of the mystery, Joseph Campbell's idea. Or is God Odin or Thor or the old man? I mean, I can go off. I get so frustrated. But also, I don't know. Yeah, I kind of believe and don't believe in God at the same time.
Yep.
And I can live in both worlds and be okay with that. Mm-hmm. And what a freeing place to be. Mm-hmm. It's so much more, lets so much more life in.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like that when we would approach like a Buddhist shrine or a Shinto shrine. And we kind of like look side by side to side, like we don't know what we're doing here at these, because we were not raised in these religions or these ideologies, but to walk up to it and pray of some sort, somehow, of like, I don't know, but there's something really special about believing and not believing, that you're talking to something at the shrine and you're saying, putting something out there. It is freeing, and it's not how we grew up.
No, it's not. And it's beautiful to connect with it in a tiny way, and I want more of it. I mean, that's what we've been saying for years. It's what we want. And but again, you see a society that you're like, oh, wait, you can live this way for thousands of years and develop whole communities around it. Whoa, it does work. Maybe that's what it is. It does work. She also had this quote. It reminded me just of how frightened spirituality can be in the West. How the rational and ethereal are competitors, their coexistence a paradox that must somehow be reconciled. Mm. Again, we struggle so much in the West with this, integrating these crazy mysteries and the unknown with, you know, science and vaccines. And it's like, you have to go all in or all out. And there's just this beauty in, no, you don't. And this one was just crazy. Wa is this word that stands for harmony, and it's in washi paper. It's in Japanese food, wasabi, like wa is everywhere. And it's this integrated harmony idea in their culture and in so many words, which again, this harmony of belief and disbelief, it's this harmony of the gods. And it's so cool. It's just, again, and also like we talked about with the mystics, I think I was shocked that, oh, the mystic voices in Japan are actually not the quiet whispers. They're actually... they almost like made a culture out of the mystics. And that I was not aware had happened before. I think some indigenous cultures, even in the US, had such a beautiful way of interacting with the earth and mystery and each other. And I think they were much closer to it, but I have never seen a modern developed society that kind of lives mysticism. And that's what Japan is, in a sense, I could argue.
It's true. That's why I felt like I time traveled somewhere, like not in this universe. Like we went to another dimension.
Yes.
And it does feel like, what was that? And how are they so old?
Yeah.
So before US,
oh, yeah.
America, whatever. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you're right. Like you can't, like it's true.
Like, whoa, wait, you have bullet trains and like a mystic spirituality tradition that everyone does?
Yeah. And whoa. So joyfully, not like dogmatically and self-righteously.
Yes.
It's just so peaceful.
Yeah. Well, because again, it's this humility, belief, not disbelief. Also, there's a stat, 83% of Japanese believe it's wrong to try to convert someone to another religion. Like this is like, what? Why would you ever do that?
My God.
We would never even think of that.
No, I spent my whole childhood stressed out.
Of course.
Because I was supposed to make sure
you
were in the right religion, which was mine.
Right. Third one is this beautiful idea of darkness. And we talked the mystics again, pain. Pain is this thing that's there. And we don't, in the West, she talks so much about how darkness is viewed as antithetical to light or the opposite of light. But in Shinto culture, tradition, Japanese tradition, it's viewed as this much more beautiful thing. They said, darkness causes us no discontent. We resign ourselves to it as inevitable. If light is scarce, then light is scarce. We will immerse ourselves in the darkness and there discover its own particular beauty. And it kind of blends into this. You don't have to be all or nothing. Sometimes it's just, wow, there's a beauty in the darkness. There's this beauty in no light. There's this beauty in very little light. It's okay. Do I love it? Maybe not. Maybe I wish there was more. Like, it's just, it's so hard when you feel your brain, years of programming, being like cracks and torn up. I can feel my brain. I can feel it in my head right now. I'm grabbing my head. And it's affecting the way I see and touch and interact with everything in the world. And it's like, wait, no, darkness isn't. It's not that. And I'm this seven, as I said before, and I don't like pain and I don't like darkness. But you're like, Ryan, but no, there's actually this like beautiful side to it. And the gods are in the darkness. They may come out in the light at times, but they live in the darkness too. There's this whole thing about anger. I think we talked about it. The guy's head, who's the god of anger and how beautiful it is. And the dark night of the soul is something to survive in Westernism. And in Shinto, that's where we live. So it's not, I gotta get through. It's like, no. Breathe, be at peace. It's okay. Emptiness, I talk so much about. Emptiness is seen completely differently. Emptiness in the West is like this negative. You have to fill it. And emptiness in Shinto is more of this thing that can be filled and how exciting that it will be filled with something beautiful. It's just, once again, these are things, just put them in your quiver, think about them during the day. We are so programmed in such a certain way. And it's just really hard. It's really hard to crack out of it, but I think it's so important for all of us. I mean, humanity is never meant to live in some little sliver. It's meant to live in such a bigger, more beautiful way. And the fourth one, which I thought was epic, is they view religion as a tool. And so it's crazy, and we saw this. There's Shinto shrines and Buddhist shrines right next to each other. And there's this whole history of Shinto was kind of the OG religion, and then Buddhism came in and it came from China, and then of course Christianity came in and had a whole effect on Japan. Actually, one could argue during World War II they believed they wanted to copy what Western societies were doing, because they saw that Western culture and Christianity had this power structure that made them follow a certain deity, quote unquote. So they made the emperor more of a deity thanks to Christianity.
Wow.
Oh my God, it's frightening. But anyway, there's this this beautiful Buddhism came in, and then Christianity came in, and there's a line, I think, in Japan that you're born a Shinto, you marry a Christian, then you die a Buddhist. And they just have this beautiful way of like, we grab whatever we need from little here and there. And again, it fits with what we've been saying. If you can have half belief, half disbelief, if gods are in everything, if this is more of a way, if darkness and light and emptiness all exist and aren't these things to avoid or paradoxical, or they are paradoxical and they're not, like you can have them both, then of course, oh, we'll go to the Buddhist shrine, we'll go to the Shinto shrine, oh, marry a Christian, sure, there's some great things about that way, oh, there's some great things about this way, and I can be a Buddhist and not hate Christians, or I can be a Christian and not hate Buddhists, because being a Christian isn't really, that's not a way that we even view it. We don't be a Christian. We dabble in some tools of Christianity that help us to find a way to live life that connects to the mysterious things of the universe and to connect to each other and to make things better.
This I love. This I ascribe to. And I can't believe how much of my deep, deep, deep programming is feeling alarmed by everything you just said. It's like, it is the crack of the crack in the brain or the crack in the belief system of, Ryan, everything you just said, your mother would say, honey, you're going straight to hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it is like, that's so beautiful and so freeing. And I can't believe the programming of how scary all those sentences were together.
Yes.
To my old self.
Yes. And I have family members that would fall out of their chair and go back to my original point. I'm an idiot because they know. And that feels good. And I've been there. But trust me, it feels 1,000 times better to be where you say, wow, I didn't even realize you could go through life this way. And just for 1 second, imagine how arrogant it is to discount thousands of years of millions of people living a certain way, and arguably, and it's hard to argue the opposite, living a much better way. If you look at Japanese culture and society today compared to ours, the way that they care for each other, themselves, their planet. No, it's not perfect. We know this. But again, that's so Western. We immediately go, well, it's not perfect. Yeah, okay, we're turning the volume knobs. Belief, disbelief, borrowing. But they're living so much better in so many ways. In their healthcare, in their gun control, in their care of the elderly, in their care of the young. I mean, just go through the stats. And to just discount that is just, oh, well, those people, you know, they're crazy. They don't understand Jesus came to, it's just, or Allah or whatever. It's just, or they're crazy spiritual woo-woo. There's no God. It's all insane. It's insane. It's truly, when you step back, you're like, I can't believe anyone does this. I can't believe anyone has the audacity to think that they know.
Yeah.
And to tell others that they're wrong, especially when the results aren't real great in your favor. I mean, if anyone should be telling them people are wrong, it's the ones who are kind of quote unquote winning. Anyway, it's just, it's not meant to get in this argument. So that's, again, Western programming. Here I want to bash whatever. I don't want to bash, honestly. I just want to inspire that there is such a much more beautiful way to live. And it doesn't mean, and this will shock people, it doesn't mean you have to throw out all of Christianity even. It does mean, fuck it being an ism and an identity and this thing that says you can't believe other things. But my God, Jesus said some beautiful things. There's beautiful things in the poetry of the Torah. We know this, and we don't have to be either or. Can I believe the Bible and not believe it? Yes. Can I believe the Quran and not believe it? Yes. Yes. Like, it's okay. And once you open yourself up to that and let your mind and your perspective crack to all of that, I think there is such a more beautiful way to live.
It's the freedom. It's leaving the cage. It's running free. It's so good. It's so good.
It's just beautiful. And I have a million more quotes, but we don't want to send this thing too long. Just read the book. Be inspired. Sit on the phrases. Sit on it. I'll end with this story, though, because it's pretty cool. I think Hearn was I don't remember where he came from. He was a Westerner. He'd come to Japan, and he was hoping to kind of find the heart of Japanese spirituality. And if I'm butchering the story here a little bit, I might be, because I don't remember it all. But I think they kind of sent him on this big quest, and it was through mountains and through rivers and through waterfalls and into this temple that was set up somewhere out in the middle of nowhere. And it was kind of like, this is the heart of spirituality. This is the face of the kami, or the face of God, that was in the middle of this temple, almost like Holy of Holies type thing. And so he went on this giant thing and
suffered.
I don't know if it was
hard.
Honestly, I don't remember. Okay, I don't need to butcher it. Okay. The point of the story is, it was this long journey to get here, and then through these like maze-like temple, and in the center of it was a mirror. And it was, yeah, you found the divine. You found the kami. You found what matters. It's in you. I mean, talk about mystic to the nth degree. I mean, it is the mystic tradition of like, you are the God. Also, just for the record, Jesus said the same thing. Anyway, that was just beautiful. This, a mirror. You found it. And again, imagine us living that way in the West. It's like heresy. I mean, I'm even saying it and like, like I remember I used to say like, oh boy, that shivers. Like, you are not God. You're a piece of shit human who was born trash and you need all these things. Mm. No, no, no. You're divine. You're infinite brilliance, as we say. I mean, you are beautiful. And it's just a matter of uncovering it and connecting with others, trying to uncover it and see it in this entire world and in all these gods and in eight gods and a grain of rice and treating rice and the farmers and the weather and the rain and the soil and the rivers and the waterfalls and the sun and the clouds and the people around you in the same way. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? Who can say that's not the way to live? Who can? All right. That is our Shinto podcast. And I am going to keep diving in because I'm just enthralled with it and inspired by it. And hope you are too. So thanks for listening again. And until next time, keep shining bright with some Shinto in your life.
Bye.
Have a good one. Lights like us together. If you do sometimes feel a little lonely or maybe a little crazy or just that you're not getting the most out of life, I am a certified coach and I love helping people find their way to better. If you'd like to know more or book a discovery call, check out rsjmiller.com. And if you'd like to know more about the podcast, lightslikeus.com. Until next time, keep shining.